You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
One win away. On that note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. The Rockets got it done in a grinder Sunday night in Utah, 100-87 winners. Rockets going up 3-1 in the best-of-seven second-round series, just one win away from the Western Conference Finals, and likely the showdown with the Golden State Warriors, who also won their Game 4 on Sunday to go up 3-1, that we've all been looking forward to all season long. All you could ask for as a Rockets fan in this era with the Golden State Warriors, as great as they are, get your shot in the Western Conference Finals with home court advantage. The Rockets took care of the latter part by winning 65 games in the regular season and getting the first seed. Second part, of course, was then taking care of business in the first two rounds of the playoffs. And against two teams in Minnesota and Utah that have played very hard and have a lot of talent, the Rockets have almost done that. Rockets now 7-2 through their first nine postseason games. And even after losing a game in Houston for Game 2, in which the Jazz, at least for the moment, took home court advantage, the Rockets responded by calmly going into Salt Lake City and winning not one, but both over the weekend to take a 3-1 lead. Perhaps the most important part of it is that, while I'm not going to say that Game 5 Tuesday night in Houston is a lock, at the same time, the Rockets beating the Jazz twice, once in a blowout, this one in more of a grinder, it shows you that there is no fear of the Rockets in Salt Lake City. And really, after what they did in Game 4 in Minnesota, I think there's not really fear for the Rockets anywhere they go. They've won in Oakland this year. They've won all but one road playoff game to this point. So above all else, from the Rockets, they're a very poised bunch. And Game 3, it was impressive their intestinal fortitude after they took a loss to see how seriously they took it from the jump. But yes, if you want to poke holes, you can say it almost came too easily. Up 17 after the first quarter, up 30 after the first half. What's going to happen when it's more of a grinder? And in Sunday's game, that was certainly the case. The Jazz, even though they didn't really have the offense to match up with the Rockets, they kept it close to their defense, got it to within 5 with about 6 minutes left in the game, and the Rockets responded just as you would expect a championship quality or caliber team to do, outscored them by 8 the rest of the way, held the Jazz to just 7 points over those final minutes after they cut it to 85-80 on a drive from Donovan Mitchell. So offensively, defensively, they executed. Clint Capella was incredible in this game, 12 points, 15 rebounds, 6 blocks. His rim protection and also his ability to switch onto the perimeter and even guard Donovan Mitchell has just been incredible this series. Mitchell, 6 of 21, 4 of 16, 8 of 24. The Rockets have made him work in a way no one else has in a long time because of their ability not just to pick him up one-on-one, but even on switches when they get the mismatches, Clint Capella is able to contest. We'll discuss him more throughout the program, but I want to lead off by discussing a guy who, in my opinion, this game was all about, and that's Chris Paul, hashtag playoff CP3, game high 27 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. He was all over the place, not just offensively, but defensively as well, mentioning those 12 boards, and he made just one of his 6 three-pointers, which tells you that he was 11 of 17 inside the arc, 12 of 23 overall. So 27, 12, and 6. He was active defensively. He was active on the glass. Chris Paul willed this game. Mentioned Capella's 15 rebounds, which led the Rockets. Clint Capella was second with 12. And because Chris Paul, the smallest player on the floor for Houston, had 12 rebounds, that's a big part of how the Rockets were actually able to out-rebound the Jazz 49-45. But in general, this game, I said it on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, showed exactly what the Rockets have in 2018 that they did not have in 2017, and that's a different way to win games besides James Harden and besides playing with pace. The Rockets actually, they figured out early in this game that pace worked to their disadvantage because the Rockets' defense, ever since all the breakdowns in Game 2, you could tell what they said after the game, their film study, they've taken their defense to another level, particularly in the half-court set, when they can get established. So really, the only time the Rockets have had, I would say, defensive breakdowns in Utah has been when it gets helter-skelter in transition, and at that point it becomes hard to make all of your assignments. There are going to be breakdowns if you get the game that up-tempo. When the Rockets slow it down into a half-court setting, the Jazz do not have enough playmakers to score with them. So in this game, that required half-court execution on offense, and in prior years, I would say especially one season ago against the San Antonio Spurs, Game 5 in San Antonio was a perfect parallel in my mind to Game 4 tonight. We saw what happened to James Harden down the stretch of the game, and in this one, even though Harden for the game had 24 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, he was just 8 of 22 from the field, and out of 24 points, at least 10 of them came in the first quarter. As the game moved along, you could tell that James was getting more and more frustrated with the officiating. It felt like in the first quarter, I don't know if the Rockets got a friendly whistle, but I'll say that the crowd in Salt Lake City did not like what was going on. And so from the first quarter onward, whenever there was contact, especially involving James Harden, it felt like the officials were reluctant to blow the whistle. And I think that got into James's head. Also, it took 4 games, but Quinn Snyder finally made the adjustment that he probably should have made in Game 1 of this series, which is not to play Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors together. The Rockets had torched that lineup all season long, and part of the reason for that is that we know the story of James Harden defensively. He's good on the defensive end, especially when he can guard the post, but if you can switch quicker players on the perimeter that he has to pick up, such as Donovan Mitchell, that's where he struggles. It's not a matter of effort. It's just an issue of lateral quickness. That's not his forte. And so if you're playing bigs like Gobert and Favors together, then it makes it all the more easier. I don't know if to say hide James Harden is the right expression, but it plays to his strengths. The Jazz, other than Gobert, they spaced the Rockets out more tonight, and so it made James' liability defensively. Offensively, after getting a couple of calls in the first quarter, the game got more physical. The refs were not letting him get the calls that he thought he deserved, and James got frustrated. He also tried to force the issue, had 8 turnovers, which was, of course, a series high. And it felt like a game in which we've seen from Harden in prior years. But unlike prior years, he had Chris Paul to pick up the slack, and boy, did Chris ever again. 27, 12, and 6, 12 of 23 from the field, but most impressively, 11 of 17 inside the arc. And most weren't on layups. It wasn't like they were easy shots. The Jazz, they knew this was their season. The Jazz going down 3-1. It's hard to fathom them winning 3 consecutive games, 2 of them being in Houston. The Jazz took this game very seriously. There weren't very many layups to be had, and that was okay because Chris filled it up from the mid-range. That's exactly what the Rockets did not have a year ago. And, well, even some of the national guys, including Chris Broussard, taking a shot at the Rockets earlier Sunday for not being a mid-range team. Well, I think Chris Paul proved them wrong on Sunday night because that's exactly where the Rockets won the game. And they won it even without James Harden being anywhere near his best, which is something they could not say a year ago. Now, does James Harden have to be better? Yes, he does. But a couple of things. First, throughout this series, the first 3 games, James Harden has been better than Chris Paul. Now, it was flipped in Game 4. Let's be real about that. Chris Paul was better than James in Game 4, but James was better than Chris in the first 3 games. So let's not act like, oh, it's hashtag playoff Harden again or something like that. No, it's one game. Teams make adjustments. I thought the Jazz, especially defensively, targeted James. I don't know if necessarily more, but in better ways than they did the first 3 games. And it got James mentally in a funk a little bit, especially with the crowd and everything that was going on. And the best thing for the Rockets, yes, when they watch the film, they're going to see possessions in which James forced the issue. He turned the ball over too easily. He checked out. There was one sequence in the fourth quarter when he missed a runner, and I saw him kind of jogging back because he was so frustrated with himself. The Rockets are going to see those, James especially, on film, and they're going to stick out. But what I will tell you is this. It's a lot easier to learn from those when you win than it is when you lose. Because when someone like James, an ultimate competitor, sees that and say the Rockets had lost tonight, you know what's going to happen? 9 times out of 10, the way a competitor like James is going to respond, he's going to put it on himself to do everything the next game to try and atone for it. And oftentimes, that's when you make even more mistakes because you're trying to do too much. In this game, it's much easier to learn your lessons if you get a win anyway, because then, you know, yes, no one is more aware of the plays James missed than James, but you're not overreacting and making it into more than it is, because ultimately, it's one game. It's no more important than the prior 3 games, which the Rockets won 2 of, and in most of those, James was brilliant. So, in this one, he wasn't. Chris Paul picked up the slack. James needs to be better, both defensively and offensively. Defensively, it's up to the Rockets to adjust. This whole series has been kind of like adjusting to the adjustments. Going into Game 4, maybe part of it was Derek Favors spraining an ankle in Game 3. But either way, the result was the Jazz not playing the dual big lineups. Not like they did it for the entire games before, but they would at least do it for, say, 20 minutes or so. Well, in Game 4, they didn't do it at all. So now it's time for the Rockets to figure out how to adjust to that with James Harden defensively. I'm sure that's what they'll be busy doing tonight and Monday on their way back to Houston in the film room. So Mike D'Antoni has his work cut out for him. But as far as James Harden, am I overly worried? No, I'm not any more worried about James than I was, say, worried about Chris Paul after he had that dreadful Game 1 in the Minnesota series. Guys have bad playoff games. It's a tough sport, and especially when you're playing the Jazz, the second-best team defensively in the NBA over the entire season, playing at home and playing for their playoff lives, basically, because they treated this game like an elimination game, as they should. The intensity was there from the Jazz, just ultimately, the talent was not. Donovan Mitchell's the best creator they have, and the Rockets have so much length, so many options, including Clint Capella even on switches, to throw at him that, even though he had 25 points, it was a very inefficient 8 of 24 from the field. And other than Mitchell, there's just not much in the way of guys who can consistently create their own shot. Joe Ingles was a little better than the 2 of 10 he was on Friday, but 6 of 13, most of those set up a lot of times by Mitchell drives. Jay Crowder, a dreadful 1 of 11. Nato off the bench, 3 of 10. Dante Exum left early with a hamstring pull, which would definitely be a significant loss given the caliber of defense he's shown you at times this series on James Harden. Ultimately, the Jazz played hard. It's just when the Rockets are able to slow the pace down, the Rockets just have too many playmakers than the Jazz do in these half-court sets. The so-called weakness of the Rockets, and it's not really a weakness, just looking statistically, over the season, the Rockets were either the first or second best offense, about the fifth or sixth best defense. The downside to the Rockets, which is the defense, is better than the downside to the Jazz, which is their offense ranked 16th in the league. And ultimately, that's what it came down to. Slowed the pace, came down to half-court execution, and ultimately, the Rockets, even with James Harden playing poorly, with Chris Paul leading the way, being able to stick the mid-range shots that they could not against San Antonio this time a year ago, the Rockets grinded out the win. And just like Game 3, they didn't even do it with their best stuff. The Rockets made just 10 of 38 from 3, just over 26%. The 38 three-point attempts out of 88 attempts overall, not that close to the 50% mark that they want as far as proportion of shots from 3 versus 2. The Jazz are a really good defensive team. They can do a lot of the same things that San Antonio did a year ago in terms of having the length to contest at the rim, especially with Rudy Gobert, and yet they have enough versatility on the wings to still go out and hug those shooters. And yet the Rockets, even not being able to throw the ball in the ocean from 3, even with James Harden having probably his worst game of the postseason, I know he had a 2 of 18 game in Game 2 against Minnesota, but he never felt as lost in that one as he did in this one. It was more he just couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. Otherwise, he was just fine. He was distributing well. This one, 3 assists to 8 turnovers. You could see between the calls, between the difference in the way the Jazz were attacking him, James was rattled. And so your MVP may have had his worst game of the year. The Rockets shot 26% from 3, and ultimately they still won the game comfortably by 13 points, 100-87. That's how good Chris Paul is. That's how good, even at age 33, this was his 33rd birthday. Happy birthday, Chris. Yes, even at age 33, he's still in a playoff setting when all the chips are down. In my opinion, still clearly one of the top 10 most elite players in the NBA. Hashtag playoff CP3. Very, very real. And yes, that's why this summer, in my opinion, he is still very much worthy of a max contract in today's NBA. Now, I wanted to spend the initial segment discussing Chris and James because in many ways it was an interesting contrast from the first few games in which it felt like James was picking up Chris to some degree. This one, it was Chris overcoming what was a poor game from James. One thing has been constant throughout the series, and really I would say the entire playoffs, and that's the interior rim protection of Clint Capella. 12 points, 15 rebounds, which was a game high, and 6 blocks. And down the stretch of the game, he was everywhere. He was rejecting shots at the rim from Rudy Gobert, leading to Hakeem Olajuwon just losing his mind in the stands. He was switching on to Donovan Mitchell and forcing misses with Mitchell trying to attack him and move him side to side. It is incredible what Clint does. And perhaps the most impressive stat of all, Clint Capella played a game-high 37 minutes at altitude. Think about this. This is the same Clint Capella that a year ago was averaging 25 minutes per game. Every question about him long-term in the league being a starter, Mike D'Antoni one of the first things out of his mouth was always about stamina. We've got to get that stamina better. Well, now, of course, the stamina's been better. We've seen the minutes progress throughout the season. But to, in a playoff setting, be able to bring that level of defense, he worked his butt off. Not just a shot blocker around the rim. And by the way, just two fouls again. I can't tell you guys how impressive it is to see over the weekend, he had a combined 10 blocks in game three and game four, and just four fouls, two in each game. That is incredible. Also had 10 blocks and four steals. Generally, when you see NBA players, especially big men, post lofty steal and block totals, it's because they're kind of like Hassan Whiteside in that, yes, there's value to the block figures, but you kind of have to take them with a grain of salt because oftentimes they're out of control in going after those, and that either they're going to get into foul trouble or because they're so uber aggressive, smart offenses can use that aggression against them. With Clint, it's never that. Everything is under control. He has a unique ability to not bite on the head fakes. His anticipation, knowing when other players are actually going to shoot and not just pump faking, is as good as it gets. And in my opinion, it's a big contrast from Dwight Howard. And I'm not trying to throw any shade at Dwight Howard. I loved Dwight when he was in Houston. Great guy, worked his butt off. But in terms of his basketball instincts, he was a very good overall player. But he oftentimes got himself into cheap foul trouble or out of position defensively because it felt like that he took it on himself to do everything. Whereas Clint has a unique ability. He never goes outside himself. You never see him reaching, thinking he has to be Superman on a given play. His IQ defensively is as good as any big man in the league, in my opinion. You see it inside, you see it on the perimeter, you see it in his ability to avoid fouls. What's amazing, you look at the Jazz fan complaints, and a lot of those were overdone. I mean, everyone watching a playoff game, if you have a rooting interest, you're going to think that there were some calls, and you were probably right, because there was a lot of contact let go in this game. But the Jazz fans that I follow, there were complaints about Harden, Paul, PJ Tucker. You barely see anyone saying, oh, Capella should have been called for a foul, and he wasn't. Because that's how smart Capella is. Not only does he not get in foul trouble, he barely picks up any at all. It is incredible to see a difference maker of that magnitude. Again, 15 boards, 6 blocks, 2 steals, and yet only have 2 fouls for the entire game. That level of anticipation is off the charts. And then to be able to score 12 offensively, 6 of 11 from the field, play a game-high 37 minutes. If there's been a storyline for the Rockets that's kind of underachieved this postseason, it's been the backup center spot. We discussed Friday night. Ryan Anderson fell out of the rotation. He was 4 of 6 his first game from behind the arc when he came back in game 3. But since then, he's just made 1-3, and I believe, he's played 5 games since then. He's made 1-3. He's looked hesitant to pull the trigger. And in general, Ryan just has not looked in rhythm since coming back. Well, not even late in the season, in the playoffs. Barely played the last 6 weeks of the year. First a hip flexor, then a sprained ankle. And we know his defensive limitations, and offensively, it's not just a matter of him not making the threes. He's not even taking that many. He just looks like a guy that's uncomfortable, that needs more reps to get back into rhythm. But unfortunately, in the playoffs, it's tough to have games like, say, you're playing Atlanta or Chicago on a Tuesday night, and you can throw guys out there for extended minutes. Unfortunately, Ryan just isn't ready. Maybe if he gets more practice reps, and especially if the Rockets can close things out Tuesday in Game 5, you then have a week to go, or close to that, I would think, before the Warriors series starts. The earliest it would be next weekend, so maybe that's more of an opportunity to get Ryan involved, especially because Nene, the traditional center, isn't that ideal of a matchup against the Warriors. Maybe Ryan can work his way back into the rotation. But for now, he's not an option. He didn't play at all tonight, and he only played in garbage time with the Rockets up nearly 30 in the final minutes of Game 3. Nene played 10 minutes tonight. He was okay in the first half. In the second half, it was a struggle. The Jazz exploited him on switches. He didn't score. Well, he did make a couple of free throws in there, but he had 3 fouls in 10 minutes. The pace just looked too much for him, and I think maybe also the Jazz playing ultra small. We mentioned not playing Gobert and Favors together. That worked against Nene. Also, let's be real. Nene's 35 years old. There's a lot of mileage on him. I don't know if it's fair to expect hashtag playoff Nene, what we saw last year against the Thunder, to occur on all that regular of a basis, especially in today's pace and space NBA with certainly the way the Warriors play, but even the Jazz choosing to go smaller in Game 4. So with Ryan not being someone they could really, that Mike D'Antoni feels like he can trust, with Nene not playing well in the second half, they had to go back to Capella early in the fourth, and they rode him the entire way. 37 minutes, and what was most impressive, he saved his best for last. The blocks he had at the end of the game, those were amongst his best, in my opinion. You didn't see him get fatigued at all. There is nobody that I've seen in the NBA that works harder than Clint Capela. That's why I'm so thrilled. Nice guy, works his butt off, could not be more happy for his success. And what's incredible, in a game in which even it felt like James Harden was getting a little bit rattled, we mentioned Chris Paul picking him up, Clint Capela is one of the youngest guys on the floor at 23, and yet he never got rattled. He played through. He even got called for a bad technical foul. He's actually just saying to the official it was a good call, and somehow he and Donovan Mitchell were given double technicals in the second half. Nothing seemed to rattle him. Clint just went about his business, and even with a game-high 37 minutes, his exact weakness over the first 3 years or so of his career, he saved his best for last, 12 points, 15 rebounds. He's been the difference. He's been better than both Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert now through 9 postseason games. It's incredible what you're getting from Clint. Yes, he's going to be a restricted free agent this summer, and Tilman Fertitta is going to have to pay close to the max, maybe even the entire max, to keep him. Good news thus far, he showed a willingness to do that. I fully expect him to, because, yes, Clint is that good. He's a big part of your future, and, well, not just the future, he's a part of your present. He's why the Rockets have been better than the Jazz through this series. They advantage Capela over Gobert. It's, I don't know if it's the difference between the teams, but it's certainly been a plus in the Houston column, and that's a lot to say because Rudy Gobert is a hell of a basketball player. He is really, really good. But even Gobert, who had 11-10 tonight, was a minus 27, the worst of any Utah player in the plus-minus. And a lot of it's because of how the Rockets are able to exploit him in space. The Jazz can't do that with Clint Capela. Just ask Donovan Mitchell, who was 8 of 24. That's how good, that's how valuable Clint is, even among centers. There are so few centers in the entire NBA that can switch onto the perimeter the way that Clint can. He may not be a max player in terms of the traditional metrics. You see a guy, 14-11. But when you look at his contributions up and down, I would say both ends of the floor, yes, he's a max caliber player. He's why the Rockets are on the verge of returning to the Western Conference Finals the first time since 2015. And ultimately, he's the biggest reason why the Rockets have a better shot against Golden State than we thought before the season. Because for the year, the question was, and even game one, even in October, the Rockets didn't really feel that they could play Clint against Golden State. The only major minutes Capela played, I think he just played about 20 for the game in that game in Oakland, and it came when Draymond left early with an injury. The Rockets didn't feel that they could trust Clint to play against that death lineup, so to speak, of the Warriors. Well, right now, they can. Clint Capela is not just a bit player anymore. It is a legit big three in Houston. He is truly a star-caliber player. So it's not just James Harden and Chris Paul against the vaunted Warriors and their four-headed monster. No, it's James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capela. And Capela's evolution into a true all-star level force, that, in my opinion, is why the Rockets have a very real chance, even against the Warriors, who, yes, looked very good in their game four romp at New Orleans, and now, just like the Rockets, are one game away from the Western Conference Finals. Now, we spent the first 2 segments discussing the virtues of Chris Paul and Clint Capela for the most part, also a little about the low lights of James Harden, because that's your big three in Houston. That's your storylines. One guy, before we sign off, who I do want to make sure that we give our due to, is P.J. Tucker. 11 points, 7 rebounds, but more impressively, 3 of 5, 60% from 3. Mike D'Antoni said throughout the year that when the games are bigger, that's when P.J. Tucker makes his shots, and boy did he tonight. I said early in the game on Twitter, death, taxes, and P.J. Tucker corner threes. That's how good he is at those shots, especially when the games are most meaningful. He was a plus 12 in the plus minus, which was second most on the entire Rockets team. Actually, James Harden led the Rockets in plus minus at plus 16. So let's be real. James did plenty of things wrong, but let's keep it in perspective. The Rockets were definitely better with James on the floor, if nothing else, because of the attention he drew from the Jazz defense. So while James has a lot of things, unforced errors to correct, let's be real, also James had 4 steals, so it wasn't like he disengaged. There was still a lot of value to what James Harden provided you. But P.J. Tucker made 60% of his threes, and defensively, he had 7 rebounds in his 35 minutes, but it felt especially like the rebounds he got down the stretch were big ones. This was a grinder, in part because the Rockets, I think, realized early in the game, especially when they were missing their threes, that the transition game was not to Houston's advantage. Because the Rockets, they knew, as dialed in as they were defensively, and the Jazz lacking playmakers. They weren't a great offensive team to begin with. There's no Ricky Rubio. Now there's no Dante Exum, leaving early with the hamstring strain. The Rockets were the better team as long as they could control the chaos. So that meant slowing it down. And ultimately, P.J. Tucker, he didn't just make his threes, but I thought defensively he was huge. He had several what I would consider grown man rebounds in traffic. This was a P.J. Tucker game in that it was a slugfest. And boy, did he respond, especially down the stretch. In game two, Mike D'Antoni said that was the game the Rockets were down 19, recovered to take a 5-point lead late in the third, but ultimately ran out of gas, it felt like, in the fourth quarter. Mike D'Antoni said that maybe they extended P.J. a little bit too much. This one, they managed his minutes, not a ton more tightly, but a little bit, 35 minutes. But it felt like the pace, especially, since it wasn't so helter-skelter, it felt like P.J., in the fourth quarter, on some of those rebounds, he had the extra gear that he did not have in game two. And it's interesting to note, because in game two, the Rockets, they succeeded in the fourth quarter of that game in getting more threes. We discussed that on our recap after the loss. But they also gave up 30 points. And they could have given up even more than that had the Jazz been interested in really scoring. Instead, what you saw the Jazz do down the fourth quarter of that game, too, was generally because they were up by like 8 or 10 points with like 5 minutes to go, which just make sure they used the full 24-second clock every time down. So one way the Rockets could have gone in game three was say, hey, we want to play super small, we want to play with pace, we'll get more threes. Actually, the Rockets, if anything, these past two games, they've gone the other direction. They looked at the film and they said, look, we think if we play defensively the way we're supposed to defend, not have breakdowns, stay locked in, then ultimately the Jazz aren't going to play, be able to score with us. And Houston is just very interesting because you would think of them as an offense-first team, Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, Chris Paul. But these past two games, it's a conscious choice by the Rockets to actually rely on the defense. They're saying, hey, even if we're not playing with pace, even if we're not taking or making our normal amount of threes, it's fine. Because as long as the Jazz aren't getting out in transition, as long as they're not potentially getting open looks off of a breakdown because people are kind of scattered in this helter-skelter setting, ultimately we trust our defense that it's just going to be better than their offense. And that's an incredible statement. I think certainly it reflects well on the culture we mentioned last year. Trevor Ariza was really the only guy you consistently trust on the defensive end of the floor. Now, on top of Ariza, you've got PJ and Luke Bamute. You've also got Chris Paul, who mentioned his 12 rebounds. He's been an all-NBA defender most of his career. So you've got a lot more defensive smarts. You've also got Clint Capella, who is, even relative to the start of this year, mentioned his liabilities the first time against the Warriors in October. It's incredible how much he's improved even throughout this season. But for the Rockets, led by James Harden and Mike D'Antoni, to get to a point where they're actually willing to trust their defense over their offense, that's incredible. And I think it starts with PJ, because even in a slowdown game, that kind of slugfest, maybe a year ago, it makes the Rockets uncomfortable. But this Rockets team, that's where PJ Tucker thrives. That's where Trevor Ariza thrives. And Luke Bamute, even though he played just 16 minutes, I thought his defense in those 16 minutes was very good, had a couple of steals, a block. And by the way, the best thing I saw out of Luke, he took a hard shot directly on that right shoulder, popped right back up, and two possessions later, finished through contact inside and drew the foul. That's exactly what he had not been doing throughout much of the first three games of this series. So the Rockets, after game two, it would have been understandable, not saying it would have been the right move, but it would have been understandable to say, hey, we got a lot of open threes playing with pace, these three-guard lineups the way we did after in the fourth quarter of game two. And to some extent, they have used that three-guard lineup with Chris, James, and Eric a little bit more. But the key is that even with those guys out there, the Rockets' identity has not been playing with pace. It's been, no matter who's out there, if we play in the half court, if we keep it under control, we think our defense is good enough to shut down their offense in the half court set to where they're just not going to be able to keep up with us over 48 minutes. And that's remarkable out of a James Harden, Mike D'Antoni team. I think Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, I would say Tucker probably shown the most tonight. Also, Capella was a big part of protecting the rim. But ultimately, this was just a gritty, tough win for the Rockets. And it was in direct contrast, I would say, to some of those games in this same round a year ago to San Antonio. And that's why this time a year ago, the Rockets were on the verge of being knocked out by the Spurs. And right now, The Rockets are up 3-1 and are just 1 win away from the Western Conference Finals and the probable showdown with the Golden State Warriors that we have been awaiting all season long. So on that note, I believe we can wrap up tonight's postgame show. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. If you want more regular coverage, best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. If you want to ask us questions, make suggestions for the show, know more things about the team, inquire about how to become a potential advertiser and reach our booming audience with the Rockets playing so well, again, Twitter's a great way you can get in touch with me, but also email at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, lockedonrockets.com, that's our website, leave us a comment there. All great ways you can read our content, get in touch with me, and let us know how we can get even better. We are the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, and so we want to be there for you on a daily basis, especially through this great playoff run that now has the Rockets just 1 game away from the Western Conference Finals. As far as the other side, the Jazz, they've got great perspective from the radio play-by-play voice, David Locke. You can find the Locked On Jazz daily podcast, same places you find Locked On Rockets, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, search for Locked On Rockets, search for Locked On Jazz, search for any team across the NBA and NFL, even a few MLB, not the Astros yet, but we're working on it, and you can find all sorts of great coverage, especially a great resource on these NBA playoffs, where there's a lot of national coverage, but it can be tough to find truly good local coverage, especially in this era where newspapers are struggling the economics of that business model. Well, the Locked On Podcast Network can really help you out, not just here in Houston, where I appreciate you listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, but also across the entire NBA community if you want to know the other side of the fence and what those in the Utah community are saying and thinking about the Rockets now having played them for 4 games. Once again, the happy final from Utah on Sunday night. Rockets 100, Jazz 87. Rockets now up 3-1 in the best of 7 series with an opportunity to close it out Tuesday night at Toyota Center in Houston during Game 5. Look forward to talking with you guys again then. For now, folks, have a good evening.